The referendum was fairly smooth. I mean, the registration process, the process of voter registration, as well as the referendum, went fairly smoothly. However, there are some there's some problems that could crop up later on because of how the referendum was conducted, or I guess how what the turnout was at the referendum. And what I guess I mean by that is that the turnout was fairly low in the capital Kinshasa, as well as in the central provinces of the Kasais. Whereas in the east of the country, where the war was the worst, was the most intense, the voter turnout was very high. Now, the reason this could cause problems later on is that the low turnout in Kinshasa is partially because the political opposition called for a boycott, or the largest opposition party, the UDPS, called for a boycott of the referendum. A lot of people stayed home because of this. And if the constitution passes, political opposition party will always be able to say that it wasn't legitimate because their followers and their supporters boycotted the referendum. And now we have to wait and see how large turnout, high turnout was, and we're still waiting for results to come in. But this is just to say that that because the referendum wasn't an inclusive process, and because there were a lot of parties that felt that it was not a perfect document, there was a lot of problems with the document, that it could cause problems later on for the government.
Now, it was low in the Kasais as well, was it not?
It was in both Kasais, actually, the turnout was fairly low.
And that's because of the opposition boycott, as well as the opposition by well-known opposition leader Etienne Tshisekedi.
That's correct. I mean, Tshisekedi's party, the UDPS, is by far the largest and the most popular opposition party. He himself is Luba from the ethnic community from Kasais. So that explains a little bit why the Kasais turnout was fairly low. Many other opposition parties actually did not agree with the UDPS. They said they asked their supporters to go to the polls, but to vote no. So there were some contradictions within the opposition on the referendum.
Now, I understand some Catholic groups were also opposed. Were they opposed for the same reason as Etienne Tshisekedi?
The Catholic Church, it's a little bit ambiguous what their stance was. The official stance of the Episcopalian Conference, which is, I guess, the umbrella organization for the Catholic Church in the Congo, its official stance was it called all of the members of the Catholic Church to go to the polls and to vote based on their conscience. But it didn't support either the yes or the no vote. And now there were some independent Catholic organizations, and it appeared in the news before the referendum, especially one, I think, called... It was a lay Catholic organization group. I don't know its name exactly at the moment offhand, but they called for Catholics to vote no on the Constitution. Now, the problems that most people have with the Constitution the largest problem was that people were voting based on a document that they had never seen and had very little understanding of. There was a very low dissemination of the document. Even people who had read the document often did not understand the document. So a lot of people said, how can we vote on a document that's supposed to provide the underpinnings for a new republic when nobody has read or understood this document? Now, the people who had read it and actually understood it still had a lot of objections. And the main objection was that it was going to create a fairly strong presidency, a president who would have diplomatic immunity and not be subject to impeachment while in office. And as soon as he left office, then he would become senator for life and would enjoy, therefore, also diplomatic immunity for the rest of his life. It was what they called the Pinochet clause, and they objected to this. And there were several other clauses that gave the president fairly strong powers in government.
Now, I understand that some who are against the charter also felt that it would enhance corruption or personal gain by the rebel and government leaders who wrote it. Is there any evidence to that? Do we see that by winning that any of these groups would benefit or have a tangible benefit?
It does provide for a certain amount of checks and balances in the financial administration of the country. Not perfect. For example, all the ministers of parliament and the president themselves, they have to declare their wealth and their belongings before when they enter government, and then again when they leave government. Things like that. It provides for a fairly strong parliament with the powers with the power to check both the executive branch as well as the judicial branch. So I don't see much evidence for that. That was not one of the main problems that the most people had with the Constitution. It's a semi-presidential system. There will be three elections next year. There will be a presidential election, local election, and parliamentary elections. The parliament will then, the president will then choose a prime minister from the majority in the parliament. If there's no majority in the parliament, then he'll choose it from a coalition, so the largest coalition in parliament. The local elections will be at the provincial level, and there'll be provincial assemblies that will then elect both the governors of the provinces as well as the senators in the national parliament.
What would be the approximate dates of these elections if the Constitution is passed?
Well, the tentative order is that all three elections are supposed to be held on in late March. I believe it's the 20th or the 21st of March. Presidential, legislative, and local elections all on the same date. Now, because the presidential election will be a two-round majoritarian election, which means that if there's no majority in the, if there's no simple majority in the first round of elections, and most people believe there will not be, then there will have to be a second round, a runoff, basically between the two most popular candidates. So there will be a second round election. All of this has to take place before the 30th of June 2006, which is the legal end of the transition, and after which there is no governing text or constitution. So that means if the election doesn't take place before the 30th of June, there'll be significant legal and probably also political problems that could cause a crisis.
Jason, what happens if the constitution is rejected?
Well, the constitution is rejected. It will cause, I mean, the biggest threat and danger is that it will cause a delay in the electoral calendar. It's already a very tight electoral calendar, and even if the constitution is passed, it will be pretty close to hold all the necessary elections and to have the campaigns before the 30th of June. Now, if it's not passed, it will have to go back to the parliament. They have, I believe, between a month and 2 months to draft a new document, submit it to the people again. This is a very complicated and expensive process, this whole referendum process. So they have to do it all over again. And not only could it push the date of the elections past the 30th of June, it could cause a crisis of trust in the government, in which and by that I mean that the opposition parties could take advantage of a no vote to say that the population, this was basically a vote of mistrust in the government, and that the government has to return to the negotiation table and restructure the whole transition. And that's something that especially the international community has been very worried about.